Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program once again Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and monthly she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. This is the time of year where things are really starting to get going, and you may, though, in fact, have some kind of problem you're not quite sure how to deal with, maybe even something that was left over from the last growing season you weren't quite sure what to do with. It's a time when also a lot of people are thinking about moving things around and maybe planting new things. So maybe you need some advice on either of those. You'd like to get some suggestions on particular plants, anything with the ornamentals, grass, trees, shrubs, vegetables, houseplants, any and all of that. If you call in and give us your question, Sandy will do her best to help you out. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Any point here, give us a call. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Good morning.
Glad to see you. And I'm glad to have you here because actually it's been 2 months. We bumped you last time because we were doing some congressional hearings, so we didn't get to see you. So I'm glad you're here.
I'm questioning your priorities, though.
I question my priorities every day. I question them. My wife questions them. I think, now, and I don't know if it's true, but it seemed to me that around our house, all of the flowering stuff, tulips and daffodils and the flowering trees, everything was just spectacular this year.
Right.
It was a great year for the spring flowering stuff. And I don't know if it was because it was on the cool side. I don't know if it's because the winter was actually kind of wet, so everything got plenty of moisture. I don't know what it was, but it was a great year for the flowering show.
It really was. And if you think about last year, which was probably one of the worst that we've ever had, because we had that really, really cold snap, like 19 degrees or something in April, where things had just started to bud out, do their thing, and then they really got hit hard. We didn't have lilacs. We didn't have a lot of things. So we really have been very lucky this year. And so I can't believe, like some of my tulips and stuff, I can't believe how long they've lasted. But I think a lot of it has to do, it warmed up a little bit early, got everything going, and then now it's been cool. And, you know, when it's cool like this, things tend to hang around a lot longer. So we've really been fortunate that way. So, you know, I know a lot of farmers are concerned about, you know, getting into the field and all that.
Sure.
But there has been kind of an upside here with just how glorious everything's been.
Yeah. So because it has been cool and things are the pace, it seemed to get off to a big running start and then kind of slow down a little bit. If you haven't done, I'm thinking about fertilization and weed control on your grass. Now, I think normally this would be a little late for that, wouldn't it? But what do you think about doing that now if you haven't done it?
I think it's fine, cause especially with the conditions that we have, where it's really kind of perfect conditions, where it's warming up, we're getting in the 60s and 70s, and we've got plenty of moisture. And really, when you talk about herbicides and those kind of things, really even fertilizer, when the plants are actively growing, which is really setting the stage, that kind of temperature and that moisture is really setting the stage for really active growth, that's a perfect time to be thinking about fertilizing as well as herbicide control, because those are really, that's what you want. You want the plants to be actively growing at that time. So that part's great, the fact that we do have that moisture. So I think it's fine if someone hasn't gotten around to, and I would even think about, we normally, a lot of the perennials right now, I might be thinking, you know, we're getting kind of late here. But I think with this weather that we've had and the fact that looks like it's going to stay cool for a while, it still would be a great time to sort of think about dividing things and moving things around. I don't think you'd have a problem with that either.
Yeah, okay. I don't think I gave the phone numbers. Let me do that.
That would probably be good.
Well, we're somebody who at least one person who
knows it already.
Without my saying. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. If you'd like to call in and talk with Sandy, give us a call. We'll start with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a big vase outside which gets some shade. And I just last year put in a hospice so that it'd be kind of the spiky thing in the middle, then I could put some flowering plants around it. And it's been very handy because it just comes up. I was wondering if there's anything that you could put in that would be like that, that could be kind of the base for some plants in a big barrel that's totally in the sun that would come up every year.
So you're looking for something spiky, is that what I understand, or I'm not
something
sure.
Something to stick up.
Something that
something
would
to stick up in the middle of an arrangement.
And you want this to be a perennial.
Right. That would come up every year, but be in the sun.
Well, you might You might, and you're talking about barrels, so these are pretty good sized containers, is that right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You actually could probably get away with some of the ornamental grasses, and I actually have done that where I overwintered them actually in some fairly large containers, and they did fine. I would probably think about some of the ones that tend to stay much more upright than some of the other ones. I think little bluestem would be great because it tends to be a little bit smaller, more upright. Probably another one would be actually like a heavy metal switchgrass. You know, well, those perennials, the problem might be is the fact that every year they're going to get bigger. So eventually they're going to get to the point where they're going to outgrow the container. So that would be the only thing. But you could certainly leave them in there for a couple of years before you realize they're just really too big. And then you could plant them somewhere else in your yard. So I would think about like the heavy metal switchgrass or any of the other kind of smaller switchgrasses. I probably think about maybe even the Carl Forrester feather reed grass. So I would look for any of those ornamental grasses that stay a little bit shorter but more upright. There's actually a few sedges out there that some of them I'm really questioning on how hardy they are, but there are some sedges out there that tend to stay a little bit more upright that are perennial as well. So I'd look to the ornamental grasses and find that you don't have to replant them every year.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Next, we'll talk with someone in Charleston, line 4. Hello.
Hello, thank you very much. I'm interested in what you would recommend for just a general use it every year type of fertilizer for a lawn. I've heard just a 12-12-12 mixture, and that way you don't really have much to worry about in terms of what you want to emphasize. Is that something that's workable?
Well, I think, and actually 12-12-12 is fine for a lawn. That's just fine. I think what you'll find is if you go with a lawn fertilizer, a lot of those actually may have a quick-release fertilizer in there, but then they have a slow-release fertilizer in there because usually what people are looking for when it comes to a lawn, they want that quick green-up, which you get with your quick-release, and then they want a continued green. So that's when you get your slow-releases in there too. So I think 12-12-12 is fine when it comes just to the health of the lawn. If you're not a competitive grass grower and you really don't want this, you know, dark, dark green stuff, I think you'd be perfectly happy with that. If you're really looking more for just that quick green up and continued green up, I think you'd be better off or you may want to look at some of the true lawn type fertilizers that have those two types of fertilizers in them, if that makes sense.
That's the first two numbers. Is that correct?
No, nitrogen is really what we're looking for, which is the first number.
Okay.
Nitrogen is the first number that we generally think about when it comes to lawn grass, simply because it's the one that really gets things to green up and causes leaf growth.
Now, is that what you usually find more often in the commercial? Some of the ones you buy that emphasize the great growth and flower blooms and so on that have a very high nitrogen content and not the emphasis on the other ones very much.
Right, and it could very well be something like a 33.55 or something. It's usually that first number is really high because generally, of course, with lawns, we're not really looking for the other two things are phosphorus and potassium, and we're not necessarily looking for flowering, obviously. We still want good root growth and those kind of things, but we certainly don't want to over-fertilize either, which is certainly some concerns with phosphorus and some of the other nutrients there. So that's why it depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah, so, one more quick question on that line. I have quite a bit of my lawn that is in at least moderate shade. Mm-hmm. Is that something would lead you to emphasize the phosphorus more in terms of the grass that seems to be not having very deep roots to it? I don't have a moisture problem. Well, I guess at least this spring in particular, I've had a moisture problem. But would that indicate some difference in the emphasis when the grass is relatively shaded?
Well, I think you have really good questions. That generally, we're going to fertilize less in the shade, as in less nitrogen mm-hmm. in particular. So.
Okay.
And so that would, and then certainly with the phosphorus, potassium can certainly help when it comes to root growth and getting them going. But, you know, a lot of it has to do with just the grass is just not going to grow as well in shade. You know, grasses are, I don't care what they call them, shade grasses or not, they still need some sun.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Our guest this morning in this hour, Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with the U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care. Your chance to ask questions. You got a problem, need some suggestions about a particular kind of plant for a particular spot, give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Piatt County is our next caller, line 2, right here. Hi.
I have three really quick questions, I hope. in the articles I've been reading in the different magazines, they always finish off with a blight and use an organic fertilizer. And I'm kind of taken aback by that because would that not be, I mean, Miracle-Gro is not organic, right? Or is there an organic fertilizer out there that I'm not aware of? Or
okay, and so your comment is when you're reading about other types of plants?
When you're doing your gardening for the spring or,
right.
or you're doing a bed or you're establishing
right.
a bed and they say, and use an organic fertilizer. And I read that like in Garden Gate.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just taken aback. Is that like fish emulsion or?
There's a lot of things out there that are organic mm-hmm. fertilizers. Certainly fish emulsion is one of those. But there's all kinds of ones that are out there, whether they're liquid or
okay.
solid or what. I mean, you could even consider things like blood meal and some of those things as all kind of organic fertilizer. So it really depends on where it comes from. You're right with Miracle-Gro. It's not considered an organic type of fertilizer. So, again, it sort of depends on, we were talking about with the lawns, it kind of depends on what you're looking for. Organic type fertilizers, many of those have a lower analysis, as in the nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, you'll notice is lower. It might be like a 5-3-3, as opposed if you got to Miracle-Gro, it might be a 12-12-12 or something much higher than that. So you don't get quite the nutrients that you would with the same amount with organics. But certainly there's some advantages with organics is that your tendency is to not burn plants. You can physically burn plants with inorganic type fertilizers, where you're not going to more than likely do that with organic type fertilizers. Environmentally, there's a lot of concerns, obviously, with over-fertilization with nitrogen and phosphorus in particular. So organics are one of those that we don't necessarily have to worry about that quite so much simply because of the lower analysis. Some of the organic type fertilizers actually add, like compost and some of those kind of things, actually add, you know, changes soil structure. So I know you probably thought this was a really quick answer, but it really isn't. It's one of those things you really have to make your decision, kind of what am I looking for? And for a lot of flowers and things in particular, they really don't need a lot of nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium. And a lot of our soils actually have quite a bit of phosphorus and potassium in them. So, you know, organics may work out just fine for you.
Mm-hmm.
It gives it just a little bit of a boost. That's really what you're looking for. And environmentally, there's certainly some concerns about inorganics.
Okay.
So,
well, I have a big perennial bed that I mix with annuals. And so are you supposed to do it at the beginning of spring? And so last year I tried Osmocote,
mm-hmm.
but that says you're digging around each plant and water it in, and that would take me a really long time.
Right. Well, Osmocote, I think, is great. It's one of those slow-release type fertilizers, and sometimes people do that. And actually, as far as digging around to the plant, to be perfectly honest with you, sometimes I just broadcast it and then just water it in.
Oh, I feel better.
It gets down in there, and it doesn't seem to burn the foliage.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
So, and that certainly helps, certainly, mid-season if you're looking for a little bit of boost. But again, most of the flowers, we're really not trying to encourage a lot of leaf growth, which is what you see with high nitrogen fertilizers. So if you're using compost, I think that's wonderful, you know, mix into the soil, you're improving the soil structure as well as adding a few nutrients. You know, I think that's just fine for flowers because you really don't want a lot of lush green stuff out there when it comes to a lot of our flowers. So,
right. Well, then speaking of killing weeds, I have some Roundup that I had late last fall.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still viable?
It should be just fine as long as it hasn't frozen. You know,
no,
I don't know
it was
if you
in an unheated potting shed.
It wasn't an unheating potting shed. Well, then I would just check and see. I would shake it up really well on something like that, and more than likely it'll still be all right.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, we would really recommend that you don't let things freeze like that in order to just to make sure that you're going to have the same. But don't make the mistake of, you know, thinking that okay, it's not going to be as good, so I'm going to double the dose.
Yeah,
you still have to read the label and use it according to label directions. So more than likely, it'll still be all right, but just shake it up really well.
Is there a safe way to dispose of that?
Yeah, you'd have to wait for a household hazardous waste pickup, and they do have them periodically. I think we usually have one every couple of years, and we're probably due next year. So you probably just hang on to it, and you could certainly dispose of it that way.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your help.
Uh-huh, sure.
Okay, thank you. And let's keep going. And next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana, line 3.
Hello?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have some purple iris that shows no signs of having any buds. I also have some peonies that have little teeny tiny less than quarter inch buds.
Mm-hmm.
And when I drive around town, I see other people's iris with lots of buds,
mm-hmm.
full buds, and some are even blooming, and peonies with big luscious full buds. what do I need to do to get flowers?
Yeah. I wonder with the irises, have you divided them any time in the last few years?
No.
Yeah, they really, irises are one of those that really have to be divided. Usually we say anywhere from 3 to 5 years, they have to be divided, because what will happen is they keep forming those new rhizomes, uh-huh. and they get so crowded in there that they can't form new ones very well, and they bloom just on those new ones.
Oh.
So if they can't form new ones, they're not going to flower for you. So I would go ahead and divide them. You could do that now, or if you want to wait till a little bit later when it's drier, that might be a better thing. But I would divide them, get rid of any of the ones that look older. Generally, those smaller young ones are the really ones that you're looking for. They have nice roots on them, and then just discard the other ones. And I think you'll find next year they'll be much better for you. With the peonies, are they getting plenty of sun?
Well, it's as much sun as I can get to them. It used to be sunnier,
right?
But it's a little bit shady now.
Right, because what I've noticed is as it gets shadier, the flowers tend to get smaller or less. So I just wonder if it's really reached that point where it's just too shady for them.
I don't have hardly any sun in my yard.
Yeah, that's tough.
But you know, you don't want to cut down the trees.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, I don't know whether there's ways you can sort of, you know, find another spot. You may find that if you get a newer one, maybe it's a little bit more vigorous or, you know, some way. You may try fertilizing the ones that you have, but I'd almost bet it's the shade problem.
Okay, do they need to be divided?
They really don't need to be. We usually say every 250 years without fail.
Oh, okay.
So if you're not in that 250-year, you'll probably be fine.
Then what kind of... what kind of fertilizer? I have put compost and manure on these plants, but it doesn't seem to help.
Yeah,
what do you recommend for?
Yeah, and I think that would be fine if you want to just use compost or manure. Or well decomposed manure. I think that's just fine. You're just trying to encourage them a little bit, but I think you're just really gonna find that it's the sun issue.
Yeah.
So you may want to think about, how do you feel about hostas? You may need to think about some shadier plants.
I have a lot of hostas.
Yeah, and enjoy the peonies in other people's yards, maybe.
Anyway, well, about the iris, if I dig them up and divide them, the ones I don't want, are they? Can I give those away, or would I just throw them away?
The ones that are young, the smaller ones, you certainly can give those away. I mean, that's how a lot of people get their irises, which is just wonderful. The other ones you can stick in the compost pile.
The big ones aren't going to do anything.
They're correct. They only ones. Those rhizomes only bloom once.
Oh.
And then they have to
form
new.
The rhizome is that root thing.
Pardon?
The rhizome is the root piece.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. That kind of thick root-looking thing that kind of sits on top of the soil. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
I was actually thinking about this myself, walking around looking at some of the peonies that we have around our house, and these are plants that are very well-established plants. They've been there for a long, long time, and I had, in fact, as the caller said, noticed some around town, there are some peonies that are actually in bloom, and ours, the buds are about the size of a blueberry. I mean, they're really small, and I'm just thinking, well, maybe they're just slow, and maybe it has something to do with the fact that it has been kind of on the cool side. Because I don't think that's, you know, they've been where they are, and I think they get adequate sun. That's not an issue. I think they're just taking their time
slower
this year. I think they're just slow this year.
And you could be right. And you know, I was talking to the folks out at Allerton. They have a peony garden out there, and they were saying seemed like it was a couple weeks behind on that. So you may be right. She may just find that these are a little bit farther along. I would think at this point they'd be getting bigger. And certainly there's different varieties of peonies, where some are really early blooming and some are late blooming. So we can't always guess exactly when they're going to bloom unless you know what variety it is, kind of thing. But you're right. Maybe she just needs to hang on, and she may find that they develop a lot farther along once we get a little warmer weather.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Champaign. Line one. Right here. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Two quick questions for you. I'm new to the area, and I have no idea what my soil is. I can tell it's new property, or we're new to it anyhow, and it's been scraped and things added to it. Is there a soil lab that you can send samples to here somewhere? And then my second question is, will dwarf species of bamboo survive in this climate? And I'll hang up and listen on the radio. Thank you.
Okay, sure. And there are soil labs, and usually you can check in the yellow pages wherever you are, and usually there's it'll say soil testing lab or something along those lines. A lot of them do agricultural properties as well, agricultural soils as well as garden soils, but they'll do both, so it's fine. There is one on North Mattis here in Champaign. I'm not sure where the caller was from, but North Madison, Champaign, the ASM labs way, way out of North Mattis certainly does soil testing locally. So just check in the yellow pages, and I think you'll find those ones that might be near you. As far as the dwarf bamboo, there certainly are bamboos that will live here just fine. And actually, the Chicago Botanic Garden did a really nice evaluation of different, smaller bamboos for more of a ground cover issue. And they really have a very nice fact sheet on smaller bamboos and ones that would work well in the Chicago area when it comes to ground cover. So you may want to just go to the Chicago Botanic Garden website and you can get their evaluation trials on that, which would be a great resource. You can kind of see which ones, are invasive or not invasive and which ones will do well here. But there's certainly, we think of them as tropical plants, but there's certainly many of them are hardy here.
Yeah, our neighbors have some. They're certainly not dwarf plants. They grow about 12 feet tall. They're very large. But it's the kind that stays in a clump.
Right.
Which is what you want,
right.
Because otherwise it'll spread and take over everything.
Yeah,
so you need to make sure that it doesn't have the spreading characteristics.
Right, and just look, and usually it'll say on the information, it'll say clump former or something like that. It'll give you an idea, or spreads by rhizomes or whatever. That may be one you may or may not want to go for.
Yeah, it's a really cool plant. I think depending on if you have the right, particularly this, which gets very tall, you have to have the right place for it, but in the right place. I think it's really,
oh, they're
cool,
beautiful
plant.
It's just like using a lot of the ornamental grasses and stuff. Yeah. Just how pretty they are, and if if you're looking for a quick screen, you can't hardly beat them because they grow so fast.
Yeah. All right, Belgium next, line four. Hello.
Yes, just going about the bamboo, it grows in snowy conditions in China because the panda bears eat them way up high in the mountains and stuff, so it is definitely hardy in very cold climates.
Yeah.
The question I was going to talk to you about or ask you about is that I've noticed this year that the walnut trees are extremely late in blooming, putting out their leaves. Now, they usually are about the last tree that puts out their leaves, but this year all of them seem to be almost denuded of leaves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there have been problems with the butternut, which is a subspecies of walnut. There's a blight on them. I was wondering, are there problems with the walnut trees this year? Have anybody else noticed them being awful slow?
I noticed a few trees, and certainly our walnuts are in that same category. Even with the oaks and some of those, it seemed like they were later than normal. But I think what may be happening with walnuts, and I haven't really looked at a lot of sycamores, which may be another issue, is, they do get some fungal diseases, and certainly sycamores are in that same category. And I'm not so sure walnuts don't get that same kind of thing, where they get those early fungal diseases that really kind of blight or really kill off that new growth, and so they have to set another set of leaves, and so it takes them a little bit longer to get going. So I haven't heard that. I don't know that for sure, but that would be a really good guess, because they do get some leaf diseases. So.
Yeah, well, the sycamores have anthracnosis.
Anthracnosis, uh-huh.
Yeah, that's been pretty hard on them.
Right, and they pretty much get it every year, and that's why they're so late. They generally go ahead and leaf out again. It's just not good. But.
And as Mr. Inge says, bamboo is amazing. It's an excellent wood substitute, which a lot of people are.
Uh-oh.
Oh, lost the caller. Well, okay. sorry about that.
Good wood substitute.
It's interesting, and also I think that they're now. I have seen various kinds of consumer products that are made out of bamboo.
Oh, sure.
The things that I know that I've seen have been cutting boards, things that you would use in the kitchen. But I don't know if that's actually something that's used for flooring. I don't know.
I've seen walls made out of wall board made out of it.
The nice thing, I think it is, it can be grown sustainably, and that's one of the features in its favor. So, well, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. We lost the caller. I appreciate the comments. And we are at our midpoint here and certainly have time for others. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. So if you have a question about things that grow in the home landscape, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You said that this would be a time when you could think about dividing and moving things. And I think in the past, you've given some general kind of advice about what you can divide and what you can't. And generally, it seems like most things that clump, that mm-hmm. grow in clumps, mm-hmm. perennials that grow in clumps, you certainly can divide. And some of them, like hostas, are pretty tough. You can be really ruthless with those
tough
plants. But there are a lot of other things that you certainly can divide. Once they get really big, either you can move them other places. If you've got people that want plants, you can give them away. Generally speaking, what should you think about when you're dividing things?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think most of those plants or anything that really does seem to form multiple crowns, where you can see there's multiple plants sort of coming up, mm-hmm. those are really, you know, pretty good guess that you can actually go ahead and divide and transplant those. Peonies are probably the one that we generally always say that really wait till September. Most things we could do spring or fall, but peonies really seem to do much better if you can wait until September to actually do any divisions on those. If you do it in the spring, they seem to put on a lot of leaf growth, but they sort of forget to put down roots. So about the time it gets really hot, then they really suffer. So if you can wait till September on peonies, usually irises we talk about after they flower. So usually we're doing the hot, dry periods because we worry about that rhizome rotting, so you may want to wait on that one as well. Most of the other stuff is fine. If there are things that really have a central crown and seems to be only one crown, I think of bleeding hearts, you know, the old-fashioned bleeding hearts, a little hard to divide on those. They tend to have one central crown. Baptisia is another one that tends to have that central crown. Makes it a little bit harder to go ahead and divide those. So you really, if you look at the plant, usually it'll tell you on how well you can actually divide it. Most plants will move. Most of them. But mm-hmm. but those in particular are also ones that don't necessarily move as well. So those with the central crown and those kind of things are a little harder to probably get those going as well.
Now, there are some things that seem to have these big central mounds, but then they will shoot off runners and mm-hmm. then pop up maybe, not that far away from the plant. In fact, I have one that I keep trying. I think it's an anemone, and I keep trying to root these offshoots, and I'm having a difficult time. And I don't know. What mm-hmm. I try to do is dig them up and get as much of that root as mm-hmm. I possibly can mm-hmm. and then go from there. And so far, I've not had a lot of luck.
Can you do it in the spring?
Yeah. And any general advice? If you're going to try to do something like that, have I been doing something terribly wrong?
It sounds like you're doing everything right to me. So it sounds like you're doing, and usually with anemones, most of those are really pretty, you know, a lot of them can be quite vigorous to the point where you can do that. So I just want, you know, I certainly would try it again, but you know, maybe those are ones that really need another year of growth of that little offshoot, and then you try it the next year or something, let it sit there for a little while and get it some new growth, and then try it in the fall or something else so it has a little bit more root growth. I wonder if that's not what's going on. Mm-hmm. And this is also a great time. We don't think about actually pruning perennials, but you know, if you have any perennials like asters or even sedum or some of those that tend to flop over and you hate having them flop over, you may find you can actually do a little pruning right now, just, you know, off with their heads, just a couple inches off the top. You'll find that they actually will stay smaller. They tend to bloom a little bit later, but then you don't have to worry about staking them or having them flop over. So this is a good time to sort of think about that. I wouldn't do that with on anything that has one central flower like peonies or something mm-hmm. like that, but certainly a lot of the things, as I said, asters and a lot of the things that tend to get too tall and flop over and we're not happy, just, you know, off with their heads or let the rabbits do it.
Well, those are also the things that I think the more you do that, they'll be lower to the ground,
sure.
They'll be bushier, and then you should also get more flowers.
Sure. You generally, sometimes the flowers are a little smaller, but generally you do get a lot more flowers. So it's really is one of those things that's kind of nice. And you can do like half of like with asters, you can do just the front half and let the back half do its thing. Or, you know, you can do that with bee balm and a lot of those. So it's really kind of fun to sort of play around with that a little bit.
And don't start with the bunnies. Don't get me started with the bunnies.
Uh-oh, I mentioned the B word.
No, that's okay. Recently, it hasn't been that much of a problem, but, you know, I got my eye on them.
Okay.
I'm watching
sorry.
Those bunnies. And someone, by the way, called and said, you heard my mention the fact that maybe I thought you could do bamboo on floors, and they said yes, and in fact, all of the floors in the new Champaign Public Library are bamboo.
Well, there you go.
So, there you go. We have several callers here. Let's get back to the folks and start with someone in Champaign in line one. Hello?
I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
One, what do you fertilize ferns with? Do you consider them acid or not? And second question, how do you tell if a plant will produce foliage or flowers if it's fertilized? I planted penstemon, and the instructions say fertilizing is not necessary. Will produce more foliage and not blossoms if you fertilize it.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know which one's which? Which flower does which?
Well, I think it's really kind of what I was mentioning before with a lot of our perennials and really with a lot of our flowers. That first number, nitrogen, the first number that, mm-hmm. that's on those three numbers is mm-hmm. nitrogen. And that's the thing that really promotes a lot of leaf growth, which is really not what we're looking for when it comes to perennials and really for a lot of even vegetables, for that matter, tomatoes and those kind of things. So if you've over-fertilized or do a lot of nitrogen fertilization, you tend to get lots of leaves and not a lot of flowers, which is true of flowers or vegetables or whatever. So that's why we usually don't worry too much about doing a lot of fertilization. Also because we're just really very lucky here in that we tend to have high fertility soils, tend to be higher in organic matter, those kind of things. So we're usually more concerned about, you know, even improving the soil structure by adding compost, which adds a certain amount of nutrients. And those kind of things are just fine when it comes to flowers. So,
really? Because I've just finished fertilizing everything. I do have a compost on top of everything, so I probably shouldn't have fertilized, should I?
You may not have needed to, but this would be one of those things to note that, boy, this really, you know, these things really took off, and they got much taller than I wanted them to be, and that's sometimes it tends to promote a lot of lanky growth, as in the taller, they tend to flop more, those kind of things. But I would just note that, you know, in the future you'll know. And as far as the ferns, a lot of them are somewhat acid-loving, and you certainly, if you do have some acid-loving type fertilizer, I think that's fine.
But like what you'd use for rhododendrons.
Right, right, and that's fine. But they're another one of those that most of the ferns are just really like a high organic matter soil. So again, we're back to compost or, you know, adding something that's really going to improve the soil structure and adding that high organic matter, and they're very happy with that, you know, and adding some mulch and those kind of things, and most of the ferns are real happy with that.
So adding compost on top of the soil and eventually working it in is considered amending the soil.
Correct. Okay. That's fine. Or, you know, you can just use it as a top dress, and what you find is the worms are actually sort of working in themselves if you want to. Sure.
Okay. That's a help.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Well, if you really were interested in trying to do something that promote flowering, mm-hmm. it's the phosphorus, mm-hmm. the middle one.
You're so smart. I told you I didn't have to be here.
Oh, stop it.
You can answer all the questions.
It's the middle one, that the number that you want to pay attention to.
Right, exactly.
But so, and I'm assuming that there probably are fertilizer mixes, recipes that would specifically say, this, if you really want flowers, this
right.
is the one
right.
that you want.
Right.
Now, is that really, though, if you, though, have pretty good soil to start out with, is that really going to make very much difference?
You know, it really depends. I really think that for most of our soils, and phosphorus isn't something that moves around a lot, not like nitrogen when it comes to nutrients, and most of our soils are pretty high enough in phosphorus that I'm not sure it's really all that necessary, to be honest with you. If you really found that you had a flower that you really think it should be flowering, you know, you may find you want to go ahead and try that to see if it encourages more flowering on it. And it would be something that it might be a 5-10-5 or something where it definitely is higher in that number, that second number, or as you said, it'll say for flowering plants. That's what a lot of the fertilizers will say.
Yeah, okay.
So, and I think that's fine. But I think it's one of those things that if you're new to the gardening or new to that particular garden, I would sort of wait and see how the plants are growing. And if you really feel like you have halfway decent soil, you might add compost. That's always a good thing. You know, add some organic matter, those kind of things, and kind of see how things go. And just, you may find you really don't need to add a whole lot of fertilizer.
And as you get more into the summer, maybe it gets hotter, maybe the rate of growth slows down, is it going to do much of anything even if you do put fertilizer in there?
You're absolutely right. To fertilize in mid-season, if you're not also watering at that time, I wouldn't bother.
Yeah.
And that would be true of lawns or flowers or whatever. If you're not also giving them an extra, or if we're having enough rain, I wouldn't bother. Or if it's really particularly hot, when we start getting much above 85 degrees, a lot of the plants shut down. They sort of get in a maintenance mode. Mm-hmm. So they're really not in that mode where they're really going to be able to do a lot with the fertilizer. So that's why it's better to do it spring and fall, you know, when things are more actively growing, that kind of thing, and just kind of let them do the maintenance thing with watering in the summertime.
Okay. Next, we'll talk with someone in Mahomet, line two. Hello.
Hi. I have a pine tree that I think has pine oak gall rust on it. What is the best way to get rid of that? Should I remove those limbs on the tree?
Pine oak gall rust?
Well, That's what I could tell from online. But, I mean, it has these galls on it that seem to have some kind of spores coming off of it that are orange.
Are you sure it's not a juniper?
I don't really know what it is.
Okay. Because it's probably like a cedar apple rust or cedar hawthorn rust. They're probably cedar. They're probably junipers, not pines.
Okay.
Is my guess. Yeah. And your question is, what do I do now?
Exactly. Yeah, what do I do now?
Yeah, it's one of those things that they're kind of unsightly this time of year because they get this gelatinous, gooey thing, and it's really kind of ugly. But those do eventually dry up, and you don't notice them quite so much. It would take a fungicide program to take care of that. Usually on the cedars or the junipers, we don't worry about it too much because it's not life-threatening for the plant. It's certainly worse on whether it's cedar apple or cedar hawthorn on the apples and the hawthorns than it is on the cedars or junipers. So
okay,
it would require a fungicide program.
Okay, I do have an apple tree in the yard, so there's potential that it could harm that, so just sort of watch out.
Yeah, now some of the apples and crab apples are resistant to the rust disease. Some of them are not, but what you'd notice is you'd notice spots on the leaves, and usually on the underside of the leaf, later on you'll actually notice, again, these sort of orange protrusions from those spots on the underside of the leaf.
Okay.
So you'd have to kind of look for that, and you may find that, you know, I'm just going to sort of deal with it and not worry about it. You can certainly cut them off. That helps to some extent if you can do that. If it's just widespread, that may be difficult. But you can certainly cut them off. Because you're absolutely right. That's the spores. Those are things that are going to help to actually transfer it over to the hawthorn or apple, depending on what it is.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck. Right,
thank
Bye-bye.
You. And next, we will talk with someone in Indiana. Line 3. Hello.
Good morning. Line 3?
Yes. Go ahead.
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really enjoy this program.
Good.
I have a quick question. I know three people that have, I think it's a European species of hazelnut. It's called Contortrix. It has a twisty stem.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's referred to as Harry Lauder's walking stick.
Right.
But in all three of these plants, the twistiness has gone out of them. They don't produce the twisted stems anymore. They just grow straight branches like an ordinary old hazelnut.
Hmm.
Wonder if you knew what was responsible for that.
Are those coming up from the base?
Well, I thought it might be a rootstock business.
Well, that's what I wonder.
I'm not sure that that's the problem.
You know, there's certainly, you know, always get these kind of weird mutations once in a while, but usually, I'm not sure I've ever seen that in that particular plant before, and that's why I really wonder if they're not coming up from the base, and I'm not sure how those things very well may be grafted, and I wonder if you're not seeing the rootstock, as you say, coming up. Yeah, and that's what I want, because, you know, a lot of times that twisty stuff or whatever isn't as vigorous as whatever they put the rootstock, whatever the rootstock is. And I wonder if you're not getting some of that going on. So you may find you just have to keep cutting those off. But that's the only thing I can think of that would really, because usually, you know, they're pretty consistent on keeping that contorted look.
But you would think since it's recognized as a species that, you know, the characteristics that it has when you buy it and get so excited by it would remain.
But I'm not sure that's a separate species or subspecies.
Well,
I think it's a cultivar. I think it's a cultivar, which is different. Cultivars are a little different than what we'll see with actually, you know, where you actually have a different species.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think it's even a subspecies of the hazelnuts. So I think it's a cultivar, which certainly can mean they can revert. It certainly can mean they can be grafted, those kind of things.
Well, I'll take a look and see. If
yeah, I would see where they're coming from. And
stock problem.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Uh-huh,
okay.
Good luck.
Have a nice one.
Uh-huh.
Okay, back here to someone in Urbana. This is line 1. Hello.
Yes, about dividing the iris. Did I hear you say you should wait till fall to do that?
Usually we do that after they flower, which is more like July and August.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really, and it's only because those big rhizomes have a tendency to rot.
Uh-huh.
And when we're cool like this, with the, you know, usually we wait until they flower, do their thing, and then it's much easier to do it, and you don't have to worry about the rhizome rotting as much.
Okay, so July or August.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure.
And I think we have our the guy we lost from Belgium is back here, line number 4. Hi.
Yeah, I got lost in telephone cyberspace. I just wanted to mention to the lady that was wondering about the funny-looking thing on her evergreen. It could very well be, if it looks like a sea urchin kind of thing, could very well be a hemlock, and that's the way they reproduce. Those little orange, knotty-looking, nasty things, that's the way they make their seeds and stuff.
Could be, but I think from her description, those gelatinous things are actually usually cedar apple, cedar hawthorn rust.
Yeah, because
it's truly a rust disease, so it does look a little bit different. It depends on and absolutely on what she wasn't quite sure what tree she had. So you're absolutely right; it certainly could be something else. But if it's a cedar juniper, I'd almost bet that's exactly what it is because this is the time they show up. So
yeah, and this is also exactly the time on hemlocks when those little things show up because I have them on several of my trees that are hemlocks.
Right. But they generally are not gelatinous. That's the big thing.
Well, they when you walk up to them, they really have a nasty look to them. They really do. Because the first time I saw them, I thought they were something that was not at all.
Not normal. Yeah.
And to the bamboo thing, they use bamboo in the Orient for scaffolding on towers that are.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Bamboo is an amazing product, but it is a very invasive thing. If you get it going on your property, stand back.
Yeah, some of them are. Some of them are.
That's
not
right,
all
yeah.
of them, but right, some of them are, certainly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh, right, thank you.
Thank you. Let's continue and talk again with someone in Urbana. This is line two. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
We have a compost pile that has been growing for the last couple of years that we haven't paid any attention to. I wonder, can we actually use that in our...
You bet.
Oh, great.
You bet.
It's like gold.
You know,
this stuff's like
gold. Compost is one of the... compost happens. It'll do its thing. If you just let it... The let it rot method, that's fine. It's not as fast as if you would turn it and do all that kind of stuff. But you'll find the stuff on the bottom. Oh, that's going to be wonderful stuff, and you're going to love it.
My uncle, who grew up on a farm... said that it would be useless, but
no.
I can't wait to tell him that.
No. If you don't want it, I'll take it.
Okay, and I do have just one more quick question. Uh-huh. We have a space in front of our house that's about 20 by 20 feet, and it is shady there, and I wanted to know if you would recommend just a couple of plants to put there, maybe even something that fruits, something, nice. And I'll take the answer off here.
And then how tall do you want this to be? Or
it could be varied in height. The problem is I just, for some reason, I'm feeling totally uninspired, and I think I just need someone with a vision to tell me what might look nice there.
Okay.
Yes, so I'm totally flexible.
Oh, okay. And you're looking for shrubs or perennials or?
Well,
not quite sure.
Perennials are great. Shrubs are great. I love fruit and vegetables. So anything that yields fruit and vegetables would be even,
I get a good one for you.
Okay.
Blueberries.
Oh, okay.
Blueberries actually do fine in shade.
Uh-huh.
It's better if they get part shade, part sun. But they do fine. Now, with blueberries, you have to amend the soil. They like an acidic soil or need an acidic soil to do well. Uh-huh. But they're, and they're actually beautiful plants. They have white flowers. They have beautiful fall color. They're very ornamental. Okay. Very ornamental. So that'd be a great one.
And is there a plant that sort of would help that plant grow at all?
Help it grow?
Yeah. Is there like a complementary plant for it?
Not
like permaculturists
like to recommend things.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know right offhand what, because we generally don't deal a lot with acidic plants, so I'm not sure. There may very well be some other ones that actually do well. The trouble is with a lot of those, they're going to want more sun than maybe what those are. But certainly, some of the companions, we certainly have some shrubs that, you're not going to eat off of them. But things like rhododendrons and azaleas love acidic soil. Father Gila is actually another shrub that does well in acidic soil. So there's ornamental type shrubs you may find that do well. Actually, a lot of the viburnums do well in shade, and some of them are quite tasty, as far as the fruits. If the birds don't get them first, there's a black haw viburnum that actually is really pretty and very nice and does well in the shade. So you might check. Now, some of those are going to be more edible than others, but you might think about it. But the birds always love them, I guarantee you that. So so that might be something you might think of between the viburnums and the blueberries.
Viburnum. Okay, and the rhododendron. Okay.
Yeah, and those would all do well in that same kind of acidic soil type of area.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Well, we have about 5 minutes left here. We can certainly get in a couple more calls. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Are there perchance some events that you would like to talk about?
Oh, how nice for you of you to ask. Actually, we have the Champagne Tree Walk is coming up on May 24th, and it really is a great opportunity. This is on University Avenue in Champaign. It's just east, one block east of Mattis Avenue. And on May 24th at 9 o'clock, you can come and join Bill Vanderwijk, the city arborist, and myself, and to learn about the variety of trees that are in just really a couple block area there of University Avenue. And there actually is a tree walk guide that City of Champaign put out, and everybody gets a free copy of that. And it's just really something nice, I think, to have. You could do your own tree walk, whatever, or if the kids have, you know, need to learn about trees later on, then you've got this tree walk guide. Urbana also has a tree walk as well. So this would be a great opportunity for people. It's really kind of amazing when you start looking at the trees individually. You know, we drive by them all the time. We don't always pay attention to them, but just the amazing diversity that's out there. You know, they're not all maple trees, so there really is an amazing diversity out there. So it's really kind of fun to see which ones. And also, if you're thinking about planting a tree in your own yard, you can see which ones, you know, might do well for you. So May 24th at 9 o'clock.
All right. And where are you starting from?
We're starting on Victor, on the corner of University Avenue and Victor, which is just one block east of Mattis.
Okay.
So we're going to start there and take off, and it should be nice.
Okay, very good. We have at least one more person here we can talk to. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. We have an area that is outside one of the bedrooms. And it's something, an area that we constructed after the house was built with a sliding window. And it's about 4 or 5 feet deep, and it's facing north, and it's got a fence around it. And we have put in a Japanese maple and rocks. But I would like to do more planting there. But other plants we've had have all died.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a big roof overhang. It's very much in the shade.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any hope for an area like that?
So it's so is it really dry? Is that the issue with the big overhang?
It's also dry, yeah.
Yeah. Dry shade is really a tough one, to be honest with you. A lot of plants don't necessarily like that. There's actually a few of them that might do kind of okay in that kind of condition. Are you looking for perennials, or you're just sort of...
Well, anything that would... would help, and if anything. I even thought of moss. I don't know much about moss. Does moss work like that?
You know, moss doesn't really like dryness. Moss does much better moss does much better on like wood, you know, around wood chips or something where there actually is more moisture and humidity around them, probably in what you're going to find with rocks. So I'm not sure moss is, you're going to be real happy with that. I think, you know, shrub wise, I don't know if you're familiar with sometimes they call them blue spireas, but they're Caryopteris.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. They'll actually take some. Does this get any sun at all?
No.
None. Zero. Zip. Okay.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, so it makes it really a lot harder. And to be honest with you, a lot of the plants don't really like the rock thing. So I will tell you. You could certainly try some sedums, which I actually like full sun, but they certainly don't mind dryness. So, and there's a bunch of sedums out there. You know, Autumn Joy is one everybody always thinks of, but there's a gazillion other sedums out there. And they actually do okay, actually, and even though they're not getting as much sun as they probably would like, they do okay in those kind of conditions. And there's a lot of little ground cover sedums that would probably be okay in that. Sweet woodruff might be another one that actually does okay in kind of shadier, drier areas. There's another plant that suffers from a horrible name, but it's called barrenwort. Or epimedium. And a lot of these, once you get them started, as in you have to water them when you first plant them, and maybe that first year kind of pay attention to the watering. But once they get established, then they do okay in drier shade.
Uh-huh. And then they would take off.
Usually. Yeah, I'm not sure you're going to get anything to take off in those kind of conditions, but they'll
at least
do
stay
okay.
Stay alive.
Yeah, stay alive. That's all you're looking for right now, isn't it?
Yeah. Sort of like a person when you get old, you know.
Okay.
You just want to be there. Okay.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. We are almost at the point where we have to finish up. I just want to ask you just to make sure if there's anybody who was holding off planting, say, something tender, they should feel like it's okay now to go
ahead
and do
that? You know, usually May 15th is usually the absolute cutoff day. you know, it's kind of cool right now. So I'm not sure I'd be real anxious to put out things that really don't like cool weather at all, isn't they just sort of sit there and don't do anything, like a lot of the tropical plants and stuff. I'd be waiting until we get a regular, you know, a little higher temperature. We get these below normal temperatures. I think I might be waiting a little bit, at least till maybe next weekend on some of those things. I don't think they're going to die by any stretch of the imagination, but some things just, they'll just going to sit there and there's a chance they might rot instead of really flourishing.
I guess I was just thinking about perennials, no problem. Even
perennials,
flowering annuals.
Yeah, perennials no I really wouldn't worry about too much. You know, and even things like impatiens and stuff, they're going to sit there and they're not going to be terribly happy that it's so cool. But, you know, they're probably not going to, they're certainly not going to die unless we really do get a frost at that point. So you can kind of play around with that a little bit. But anything that really is tropical, you know it's a tropical plant, I would be a little reluctant to put it out there yet.
Okay. Anything else that you would mention just for people to be thinking about it right at this time? If any sort of thing like, say, if you haven't done this yet,
yeah,
go and
well,
do this.
Probably the big thing to keep in mind is that, you know, the lilacs are just finishing up blooming. And so if you have to do any pruning on any of those spring flowering things, I'd be thinking about that. So if you have forsythia or, you know, certainly the lilacs, those kind of things, I'd be thinking about, okay, as soon as they quit flowering, that's when I need to do my pruning. This would also be the time toward the end of this month, especially if you have some like pine needle scale and some of the scale insects. Timing is real important on those. So it may be perfect time to be thinking about actually doing some control on those as well. So a few things in the landscape.
Okay. Well, and one more time, remind people that if you want to get more friendly with your trees.
We're going to hug trees that day, I guarantee you.
No, tree hugging going on. And especially, well, I think it's, I feel this way that I see trees and I would like to know what they are. Now, there may be, there are maybe about five different trees I could tell you what they were, but past that point, I'm not so sure. So this would be an opportunity to do that. So the tree walk, this is May 24th. Starts at 9 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that 9 in the morning.
Yes.
At the corner of University and Victor in Champaign. And you're going to be there. And also the Champaign City...
City Arborist. Arborist Bill Vanderwijk's going to be there as well.
All right. Very good. Well, thanks very much.
Fun. Yeah, thank you.
Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month. It's always on a Tuesday. She's here. We do lawn and garden care. She'll be back next month. Oh, and in the meantime, if you're a gardener, you want to be watching the show we have on WILL-TV. The show's called Illinois Gardener, and it's on Thursdays at 7. It's a live program. Diane Nolan is the host of the show, and she has an ever-changing cast of characters who are there to do this kind of thing, to answer questions. So you'll want to see that. WILL-TV, Thursday night, 7 o'clock, Illinois Gardener. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. It was fun.